It is now physical devices and sensors that are linking up with each other. Huge and increasing amounts of data are being collected.
Are you ready to record?
Okay, yes.
Welcome to Dithering on the Edge of Europe, the podcast about what it feels like to be European and live in the UK. I'm Carola Böhm.
And I'm Richard McCarthy.
Right, we're very funny this morning.
And now it's Ursula von der Leyen's statement about how Europe is to be, a union that strives for more.
And this is Ursula von der Leyen's agenda for, or political guidelines, as she has titled them, for the next 5 years of the European Commission, because, of course, she's the incoming president of the European Commission.
Yeah, her promises, in a way, or what she's going to try and do.
Yes. And in the last episodes, we covered the first two sections. One was about the European Green Deal. The second was...
an economy that works for people.
And now we have...
a Europe fit for the digital age.
And, of course, there's a lot in there. But we pinned it down to three themes.
So the first theme is pretty well joint standards for 5G networks. The second theme is the Digital Services Act and, if you like, policing and...
Cybersecurity.
And the third thing is really digital skills, digital education.
Well, it's also the European education...
Digital Education Action Plan.
Right. Okay.
So the first one is the joint standards for our 5G network. So what are those, what are the things that the joint standards cover, Carol?
Well, the Commission, in order to get the standards up and running, identified five priority areas. And those are 5G, cloud computing, Internet of Things, data technologies, and cybersecurity.
Okay.
And of course, the Internet of Things is a quite a fashionable concept at the moment. Everyone is talking about it. But you're looking critical at me there.
Yeah, I think people were talking about it last year or something like that. But yes, whenever it was mentioned, it was all about, oh, you can put the oven on you when you're on the way home so that your food is done by the time you get home when you walk in the door. You can have the heating come on just when you feel like it. You know, if you don't come home at the same time every day like most people do, if you just in and out every now and then into your house, 20 minutes away from home, you can turn the heating on so that your house is nice and warm when you get there, and then presumably turn it off if you forget to turn it off. You can turn it off from somewhere remotely afterwards.
Right, so you don't like smart homes?
Not in a big way, no. I think it's a bit of a waste of time.
But of course, Internet of Things goes beyond smart homes, because to a certain extent, I think I agree, we also don't have an Alexa. There's another one.
Yeah, different name for the same thing, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So we don't have any of those. Our light switches still are.
But we
being
marvel
done.
At them when we've been to other people's homes who have it. And we go, ooh, Alexa, do this. Alexa, turn it up, turn it down.
We do have Kate.
We have Kate, but that's in the car.
Yeah, it's not quite Internet of Things. Or is it a bit Internet of Things?
It's not really Internet of Things.
What is Kate?
Kate is the...
GPS system.
Yes, that's right.
Yes. Well, when we got a GPS system and we called it Kate, yeah, we felt we were...
million years after everybody else.
Exactly.
So Kate's very refined in that way.
Yes, okay. Right, but of course the Internet of Things can be used for other things as well. And I'm just going to read a list, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't interrupt me in that list and be critical of every single point.
Go ahead.
Okay. Stopping deforestation. Then protecting species, like they've put a project, Internet of Things, about bees and beehives. City bike schemes, traffic flow, bus stop management, yield improvements, having just simply greener structures which are smart in terms of saving energy, water, utilities, electricity. Landslide monitoring. Or if you think about elderly people, when we get older, we might feel more secure having monitoring devices so we can live longer in our own home, and that when we fall unconscious or when we fall, you know, that automatically calls an emergency service. Of course, wearables, any kind of wearables, whether that's for fitness, health or entertainment. So any kind of, I guess, virtual reality gaming fits into the Internet of Things, you know, wherever you use sensors and you connect sensors. to a sort of software system, that's Internet of Things. Oh, yes, automotive cars, supply chain management, which was of course, one of the first areas which used the Internet of Things. And, of course, if you expand smart homes, you get something like a smart city. So on a larger scale, on a smart city, you can do things just, you know, like I said already before, you know, you can manage traffic flow better, bus stop, any kind of public services much better. So those are all little examples of, I guess, areas where you could use the Internet of Things for environmental things.
Yes, okay. Well, I think a lot of those things are things which haven't been worked out yet, which need to have a lot of work put into them. So sure, you could make it's possible to make traffic run more smoothly in a city centre.
I think I know why you don't like the Internet of Things.
Why?
One is cars, because we all need to do much less with cars.
Yeah, so that would solve that without any Internet of Things.
What if we didn't have cars?
If we just got rid of most of our cars.
But in the last episode, you actually said we need to have more car sharing schemes, which would be more possible with the Internet of Things.
Yeah, that's true.
The other thing is lights in buildings.
Yeah, and lights in buildings, I think, is a rubbish. You mean in terms of it turning off lights automatically?
Yes, you know, we all experience the phase where most of our public buildings, automatic light switches were put in. So if it didn't detect any movement, the lights would go out. So we had these dancing employees who every 10 minutes had to wave their arms around to not be left in the dark. Did you have that in school?
Absolutely. So in the winter, after about 4 o'clock, when I'm still working at my computer, which has to be right in the corner of the room, because that's where it connects to the internet sort of thing, then every 10 minutes the lights go off and I have to get up in the dark, stumble around past my chair and stuff into the middle of the room, waving my arms till finally it comes on. Then I go and sit down again. 10 minutes later it goes off again and it's pitch black, etc., etc. So that's one. But also whenever I go to get my, when I get my knee done, if I go to the toilet there, I go in, shut the door, shut the next door, sit down, just start my business, and then the lights go off. So I have to open the door again, wave my arm around, lean away from the toilet, wave my arm around until the lights come on again. So that's how it, but they have lights which are sort of 20 times too bright. Yeah. So what they ought to do is remove 3 bulbs from the 4 bulbs that are there and take away the monitor and just have a little sign saying, please remember to switch the light off when you leave.
Having said that, you know, I do understand the misery that has created. I think statistically it has helped save a lot of energy, actually. It has helped.
Maybe.
But it might just be because we were all sitting in the dark and not bothering to wave our arms around when we were in the middle of doing something. You know, I don't know. But I think those are the beginning, the growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, it has to get smarter. But, you know, why is that not a good idea if it works?
The other aspect, you know, the classroom situation I was talking about, be far better to install a separate light so that if the teacher or somebody's there late, they can have one lamp on and they can just leave one lamp on and switch off all the banks of lights that are there. You know, that's how we ought to be changing things rather than switching everything on and everything off with sensors, because that's a waste of energy anyway.
Okay. So I'm not as negative about the Internet of Things as you are, but I take your point.
Okay.
And I think the big point is that, you know, as we tumble towards a climate catastrophe, we might want to make sure we've got our priorities right.
Yeah. It's good to be able to, never mind. Might be bum on the loo while you're stumbling towards climate catastrophe.
But I do think we can use the Internet of Things for climate, you know, saving actions or environmental saving actions, like these examples of, you know, the Internet of Bees or stopping deforestation, stopping illegal logging and stuff like that. Right. Digital Services Act.
Yeah, so the Digital Services Act. A new Digital Services Act, that's the fourth time we've mentioned that in four sentences, will upgrade our liability and safety rules for digital platforms, services and products, and complete our digital single market. Digitalisation and cyber are two sides of the same coin.
The Digital Service Act as far as I could tell, has sort of three areas. You know, I think we've all encountered the issues that it's trying to address. One is hate speech in Europe, especially in online platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And if we think about the European, I guess, digital space, we know we have different rules, different divergent rules for removing hate speech at the moment. You know, we know that in Germany, for instance, you have much more protection than in other countries. And I think there is this balance to be had between free speech and citizen rights and protection of citizen rights. And this is trying to address that.
Mm-hmm. And that's why Facebook employs 1/7 of all its online checkers in, they cover Germany.
Yes, because Germany has much more conservative
regulations about hate speech. So they would fine Facebook if they got things on Facebook that maybe would just go by the by in Britain,
yeah,
for example.
And I mean, I just recently saw a map which demonstrates that quite well. And it was a map of the Google Street Map coverage. So where you know how you can go to Google Maps and you can put our postcode in, you can see our house,
yeah,
from Google
above
Street Map,
sideways and
yes, exactly,
all sorts of different angles. And this
then,
year, that year,
and you zoom out to Europe and see where is their coverage of Google Street Map, and most of Europe is complete coverage except for Germany, where there's almost no coverage at all.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I liked Google Street Map.
Yeah, I know. I remember you. You kind of lived on it when we were looking for a house for 2 years.
Yes, exactly. Right, okay. So that was the hate speech. So as I mentioned, you know, there were sort of three areas that the Digital Services Act is trying to address. The second area is common legally binding rules on online advertising services, including political advertising.
Disinformation.
Yes, absolutely. Because, of course, we know that we've had a problem of micro-targeted disinformation campaigns. And that's a real problem. It was a problem in the referendum. So we can simply suggest for everyone interested to watch the Netflix The Great Hack, which basically looked at what happened in the referendum in 2016, in the Brexit referendum.
Although that doesn't go into the disinformation. It goes into the micro-targeting, not the disinformation.
Yeah, okay. And of course, one of the problems of this micro-targeting is that it's very easy to set up, but it's very difficult to detect. So you might receive some adverts or some information that might be construed as propaganda or that I would interpret as propaganda, but I would never see it when I log on. So there might be the effort to change your views on something because there's an identification that you're gullible in terms of...
Or just certain things will switch you.
What would switch you?
In terms of advertising for a particular company, you could have the company director stroking a kitten, and then people go, oh, yeah, I really like him,
yeah,
without even realizing it.
And it's because you bought kitten food at some point, and the connection is there that you like kittens, and then you see kittens
I looked at
like...
lots of pictures of kittens on Google or...
Esso, for instance. Kittens like Esso.
Yeah, that's right.
And suddenly you become a car friend, wanting to drive everywhere, wanting to have petrol cars.
Well, always buy my petrol from Esso, for example.
Yes, exactly. So that's a problem, and that's the area which they want to address. And the last area is digital collaborative economy in their interactions with national or local authorities, so like tax authorities or legal or police authorities. And of course, you know, if we do have something like cybercrime, you know, then there need to be the ability of the criminal justice system as well as the criminal enforcement services to get access at the data to understand what crimes have been actually committed in the cyber area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, there are a lot of online communities which are now up in arms about it, because as we said, it's always a balance act between free speech and security of individual rights. I think there's a fear that that might be over-regulating and would interfere with the freedom that we have online at the moment. So, you know, take again the example of who's stopping extreme right material to go onto Twitter, to go onto Facebook.
Yeah, the last two huge shootings in America have both been linked to 8chan or something, 8chan.
Yeah, 8chan. Yeah.
Which was a freedom of speech site where all sorts of horrible things are discussed, to the extent that the person who started it gave it up a long time ago and has now try to make sure it gets closed down. It has been trying to get it closed down for a long time. Just wondering what the UK has got on this. I wonder how far we are on, you know, sorting out our digital problems and so on. I don't think we are very far, to be honest.
I'm not so sure, because when I looked into this, I hadn't realised that there was a UK cyber security unit.
Mm-hmm.
However, what were they doing during the referendum? I didn't hear that they were investigating anything.
Well, the UK cyber security could be all sorts of things. It could be about fraud. So they don't care about what people are talking about. They just care about people trying to swindle people out of money or large amounts of money.
Well, it's the cybercrime unit, Britain's national cybercrime unit.
Okay, so I'm sure that's the idea of it. It's probably that, but it will also be people taking pictures of children and...
Well, you know, and I think it comes back to sort of how much the government of the day supports those kinds of institutions. You know, when we cut down the state, you know, as we know, police force were cut in the last 10 years hugely. Substantially. So we do need politicians and ministers to support the institutions which safeguard this area. And, you know, my feeling is that in Britain for the last 10 years, we had governments which wanted to reduce the state, and that has endangered our ability to react to things like micro-targeting for electoral suppression of voters, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that was the second area, the Digital Services Act. And then the last area was the European education area.
Empowering people through education and skills. So equipping people with digital skills largely, but then once they've got the digital skills, then educating them in all sorts of other things.
Yeah. I think it's more general than that, because she also says, I believe Europe can successfully manage the transformation into the digital age if we build on our strengths and values, empowering people through education and skills. So there is a whole sort of aspect about education, because we need a good functioning education system in the digital age. So it's not just about digital skills. It is about education in the digital era.
Yeah, and it's all about the digital era, because it's talking about perhaps mass education, mass online education digitally, and being able to move from one place to another and still be able to be educated because you've done lots of language studying online. So I think it's hugely about online learning.
Yeah, because it belongs to lifelong learning as well. You know, so it's part, of course, also about the European Pillar of Social Rights. And within those, you know, it's stated that everyone has the right to quality and inclusive education, training, as well as lifelong learning. I did look up this area, and if I just really short outline what the whole sort of policy development was over the last 2 years in terms of the European education area. So it started, I think, in November 2017, and the European Council met and they had a debate on education and culture. So it's interesting that they put culture and education together. And they were committed by the end of that meeting to enhance the EU efforts in the area of education and culture. And they focused on four areas for that agenda. One was scaled up mobility and exchanges for young Europeans. So we, of course, have them at the moment for university students and staff, but we probably don't have them sufficiently for secondary school pupils or primary school pupils. Second one was a network of European universities. Third one, the mutual recognition of secondary education diplomas. And then the fourth one, an Erasmus for young artists. So can we do much more exchanges for artists, which is a really, really nice one. So that was the beginning of that development. So this was November 2017. By January 2018, they put an action plan together, and that incorporated digital education as well. So there was a digital education action plan. By March, they included into the European education area aspects of apprenticeships, so the vocational aspects.
Mm-hmm.
By November, they looked at including higher education, so mutual recognition of higher education and upper secondary education and training qualifications. And by May 2019, they also included teaching and learning of languages and had some recommendations in relation to that, as well as early childhood education and care systems. So it's quite a large area, which includes primary, secondary, and tertiary education. It includes apprenticeships as well. It includes language learning, and it also includes early childhood education and care systems.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very good.
Yeah, and I think it's good to see that as a big package. It's part of the social pillar, of course, again, as well, but it's quite nice to see that there is a lot of thinking about how we can work together more and how we can experience Europe together more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the part of that, the last element of that, is of course Erasmus+. So I think she announced that the Erasmus+ budget will be tripled.
Yep.
And those are the three areas.
Okay.
So shall we leave it at that?
Yes. Oh, we're really glad to get away now. So.
Because we just want to put our legs up and drink a beer.
I don't think either of us going to drink a beer, but it'd be nice.
A virtual beer? A digital beer?
Okay. We're going to imagine drinking a beer.
We're going to imagine drinking a beer. So if you enjoyed the show, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. It does help others to find us. Feel free to follow us on Twitter on Dithering on the Edge, @DitheringE. Goodbye for now and have a fabulous week.
Goodbye.